Hi, this is Bobby Favre.
And this is Babelito.
And we are Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
azúcar. Sounds like shit. I don't know why I didn't bring like a regular microphone to Miami. I don't know what the fuck's wrong with me.
It can be worse than call your girlfriend, so just keep it going.
I know. That's the joke we told last week, though.
That's okay. We can keep telling it because it's just the last week we're going to do this.
I hope so. Oh, my God. Well, hello, hello, hello.
Que show.
How are you, Babelito? It sounds like you're in an echo chamber. Where are you at?
I am in an echo chamber. I am in a different dimension. I am in Puebla de Los Ángeles. You say, ¿qué tal? You still
wow.
in Miami?
I am in beautiful Miami, Florida. Yes.
Miami.
What happened? What's going on over there?
Nada, güey, tú sigue platicando.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in Miami. I'm still over here at the residency that we talked about before. It's my last week here, and I've just been enjoying the sights, the sounds, the rhythms of the streets. I'm just excited to also get back home and see my family and friends in Las Vegas. I have been really, really missing everybody, so.
I feel your pain because I've been away from home for like a month and a half, and I still have another week, and this is the longest I've been away from my dude, so it's painful.
Damn.
But I'm almost there.
So where are you at? You're in Mexico? Puebla? ¿Qué haces?
I am in Mexico. I'm in Puebla. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about my trip to Veracruz because it was fucking hallucinating, man. The place, it's real, and history works in ways that I never thought about before. So I can't wait till we can sit down, face each other, eat food, be Latinos Who Lunch again, and talk about fucking crazy monuments that I saw in Veracruz. But I was checking Instagram and I saw there was like quite a party in LA this past weekend.
Oh,
I was very jealous about it.
My God, you missed it, bitch. It was so much fun. I went to LA. I took a little break from the Sunken Place residency and I went to LA because I have work up at the Peterson Automotive Museum. Shout out to them and to Dr. Denise Sandoval, who curated The High Art of Riding Low, which is going to be up through like next year, through June 4th, I think, of next year.
Wow, a whole year. That's awesome.
Yeah, so if you haven't checked out the show and you like cars and you like lowriders, go check it out. And then
check it out.
I had a closing reception at Palos Verdes Art Center. And so I went out, and Luis from Tamarindo, I want to give him the biggest shout out right now because he was like, okay, tell me when you're coming. I'll pick you up. He picked me up from the airport, and we hung out all weekend. He even let me borrow his car. It was
That's amazing. He's incredible.
I know. So
he keeps telling me that he's going to have like a big party for me when I get there for my FYF weekend, and I can't wait to see him too. So shout out, comadre.
Yes. The first day I was there, I ended up going to the museums, and Ramiro from one of our previous episodes, the artist Ramiro Gomez, met up with me and a couple other friends, and then we ended up going to the LACMA to see the home show with all the Latino artists that he is in.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Incredible show. And then we're like, hey, let's go out. Julio Salgado joined us. I never met him before, but Brown Skin Hazel, he is on Instagram. His name is Sebastian.
Yeah.
He joined us, and we had a gay old time at Nuevo Jalisco Bar, the new Jalisco Bar. It was really cool.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, L.A. was beautiful, and I loved it. I even met up with Jasmine from Me Too. And
oh, wow, that's awesome.
And I got to see the Me Too offices and, you know, was like starstruck because I like saw everybody that are on all those videos, you know. I was so excited to be in L.A., just like to be out and breathe some air for a little while. So thank you to everybody that I saw. And I can't wait to go with you and like just interview everybody and have a conversation with everybody because There's so many badass people there, and I've never really appreciated how close we are to LA before. So it was just,
yeah,
it's just been eye opening being like on the East Coast for like over a month and a half, and then flying over there and just feeling so at home. Even though, you know, it's not Las Vegas, but it was awesome.
No, it's amazing. Like, and we have some LA guests coming to the podcast too in the next couple of weeks. So everybody should stay tuned, because it's going to get very interesting. It's becoming one, like the Vegas family and LA family is becoming one. And that's more palpable with every episode. So
yeah,
I'm excited for people to listen.
Yeah, for sure. So today's episode, so while I've been in Miami, I've been talking to people. So today you're going to hear a little bit from Zwan Chung, who actually left already. He left like a week ago, but while he was here, I talked to him for a little bit. So just to recap, I was curated into this residency, by Jose Diaz, who is the head curator, the chief curator over at the Warhol Museum. And he also curated in Yvette Mayorga from Chicago, who is an amazing artist, and Zwan Chung. He's from Pittsburgh. So we got to all hang out, and I interviewed him before he left. And it was so sad when he left. Me and Yvette, like, really... Me, Yvette, and Zwan really bonded, so it was like really weird for him to leave before we did. And for
did you cry?
Maybe a little bit, but well, me and Yvette got super depressed after he left. We're like, well, what are we gonna do now? I don't know.
Watch RuPaul. What else are you gonna do?
I know. Yvette doesn't like RuPaul that much. It's kind of sad. I mean, she likes it, but I get it. Like, it's just not her thing. Anyway, we're gonna play a little bit of that conversation.
And that's exciting. But before we listen to that conversation, I want you to tell me what you thought about Judy's conversation last week.
Oh my God, Judy is a badass. Okay, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, the Mordida with La Judy, she is so inspiring. Can I just tell you? I love her. I can't wait to meet her. And I'm definitely going to hang out with her when I go to Albuquerque.
Girl, you met her already.
Did I meet her already?
In Denver, yeah. In Dale's concert.
Oh my God, I did. I did meet her. Well, I need to meet her. I mean, I need to hang out with her. We just like...
Yes, yes, yes.
You know what I'm talking about. Oh my God.
Totally.
I did meet her. We need to go to sleep.
But it was really fast because it was in the dark in the parking lot. So, you know, well, I'll give true. You this one. But yeah, like...
Yeah, that was like a shady ass... Okay, go ahead.
She came to my defense and she told me, she's like, can you please find me another student I can take in? She's become family and she's been an incredible part of everything I've done in the past 10 years. So I was so happy that I had the opportunity to do this, and hopefully other people get inspired by her, because I learned so many lessons in the past 8 months I've been living with her. So I'm glad you also like the Mordida.
Yeah, she's awesome. And I can't wait to see her. And because I'm going to do a little project at the National Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque. So I'll be there for a whole week in August. So I'm super excited.
You have to go to Gorditas El Paisa.
Done.
And guess what? It's only 2 blocks away from the Hispanic Cultural Center.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have a heart attack. It's going to be great.
It's like you take a bite of that and you feel like you're in Zacatecas. So badass. It's so good.
Oh, my God. I might never leave. That's wonderful.
Ay, güey, las gorditas de harina de barbacoa. Ay, ya quiero comer.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with Zwan Chung.
Today's episode has been brought to you by the original Lindo Mitchell Clan in Las Vegas.
Dude, I'm going to tell you something.
Tell me.
I am here at the culinary capital of Mexico, and I still find myself eating chiles en nogada and thinking about una torta, una tortuga de Linda, Michoacán.
You're still thinking about Linda, Michoacán, even when you're in Mexico?
Aunque no me la creas, cabrón. It's amazing.
Oh, my God. Are you talking about the same Lindo Michoacán I'm thinking about? The original Lindo Michoacán on East Desert Inn in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada?
Ese mismo, el que está en La Deserín.
En La Deserín! Oh my gosh, and you know what? Because Latinos Who Lunch loves Lindo Michoacán so much, they decided to give all of our listeners 25% off. That's right! If you go to Lindo Michoacán...
¿Qué?
I know. Let me finish. If you go to Lindo Michoacán today and say, hey, I listen to Latinos Who Lunch, guess what? They'll give you 25% off.
That's amazing. I can't wait for my tortuga. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Those tortas are to die for. Lindo Michoacán. Save water. Drink margaritas. All right, Ziwan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
Freshly showered?
I am, not you.
Squeaky clean? Well, yeah, because you shower like 4 times a day.
I hate sweats.
So,
I hate the feeling of sweat.
Yeah, Ziwan and I have been here in Florida together for like a month,
mm-hmm.
almost.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And
yeah,
we're here at the Fountainhead Residency.
Mm-hmm.
/ the sunken place
.yt
sunkenplace.yt, and it's been an interesting experience. Miami is a weird place. I'm not gonna hate on it because people hate on Las Vegas all the time.
Well, people hate on everywhere.
People just hate in general,
yeah.
Right?
New York, but... LA, Chicago. There's always places.
But anyway, it's been a cool experience here, and I've mentioned it before on another podcast, but it's been really nice getting to know the other artists here, and I think that's what I take away from most residencies, is getting to meet other artists.
Yeah.
And like here, we've been living in very close quarters and are like roommates. And since it's so fucking hot outside,
we're just here all the time.
We're just inside. We're trying to stay in the air conditioning. But so when I got here, it was Corey Newkirk. And then Corey left, and now Yvette Mayorga is here hanging out with us, and you're gonna hear from her in the future. But let's get into your artwork. And I know it's kind of weird to talk about art over a podcast, but just so people get a general sense of your work. So you do a lot of video work.
Mm-hmm.
You do some sculpture,
yeah.
installation work.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you can explain it a little better than I am.
Yeah, I mean, I always like to say I'm the jack of all trades, master of none. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I started out as painting, painted all my life. Towards the end of my college year, I started really falling in love with artists who didn't paint. And that was sort of like I kind of entered a sort of crisis because I didn't know anything but painting.
Yeah.
So I was interested in these sort of gestures and simple, like, installations and conceptual art. So, like, at the time I was looking at Francis Elise and Felix Gonzalez-Torres.
Mm-hmm.
And we just both saw Felix Gonzalez-Torres at the PAM,
mm-hmm.
where we basically ate. There's a pile of candy, and the viewers were allowed to take the candy.
Yeah.
And it was endlessly producing by the institution. So I kind of took a few years off. I taught SAT in Korea. I did a brief residency in Berlin. And then I did some web development work in LA. And then around that time, I think it took me like 3 years of gestating my thoughts, thinking about art, to like have the guts to start making sculptures. So I would go to like swap meets in LA. I bought up all this cheap stuff that I filled my house with, and like I just slowly put things together, and that's sort of how I broke free from painting. And then
mm-hmm.
and then that sort of opened me up to like what I realized was I liked artists who accepted every medium as possibility, which is both scary. I think that's why it took me so long, because painters will always say they love the constraints of having to paint on a canvas.
Yeah.
And it's scary. It is scary to have like no foundation for which you draw a line around. But mm-hmm. for me, it's been freeing, and that's a lot of the artists I like do that as well. So that's, I think, why it took me so long to stop painting. And so I think when Justin was describing all the things I do, it's not because
I'm Favi on the show. Please.
Sorry. So when Favi said that I did all these things, it wasn't because I'm good at all of them, but because I find pleasure in doing all these different forms of expressions and how each one does something different.
So you made the shift from painting to video because you thought that video couldn't express the same, you didn't get the same feeling from watching, I mean, from looking at a painting versus watching a video?
Yeah, I mean, I think I went into sculpture first.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until I started making, I made molds. My first video, I made a mold of my dad's face.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't quite know how to show it. And somehow performing that mask seemed like the most powerful way to, since I'm talking about embodiment,
yeah,
to re-embody my dad instead of like a photograph or a painting as a representation of body, it seemed to make more sense than just act out my dad in a poorly fashioned manner.
Right.
Because we can never truly understand or embody people who are close to us. We can try, right? And but mm-hmm. there's always a missing link, and I think that's what I think my videos are about. And so then I was like, oh yeah, like performance sort of makes sense. I like the messiness of performance. As I've developed as an artist, I think I talk a lot about race, identity, language, categorization, and those things are messy and they don't really have an answer. They're like, you know, there's always pros and cons. Like anytime there's an uproar about cultural appropriation, usually it's a gray area, and there's always someone who says one thing and someone that says the other, and usually the answer lies somewhere between. There isn't truly a right or wrong way for it. And the same thing with identity politics, gender politics, and even people who are for, there's like different gray areas of some people want, you know, an extreme and some people don't. And I think performance, because it's so messy in video, it allows for that sort of messiness to sort of thrive.
Right. So on this podcast, we talk a lot about identity, accessibility, and representation, and how that really does matter. And we also talk about art a lot. And I know we mentioned before that for me personally, it's really hard to get into video art most of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And
me too.
Okay. So like I will go into a museum, and if something really has to be good
mm-hmm.
for me to actually watch a full video, know, and a lot of times video art actually has kind of won me over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I actually will take the time and watch a full video at a museum, you know, that's like half an hour long or whatever. But I'm still working on like performance art. Like I just went to a performance art festival in Kansas City.
Yeah, and how's that?
I thought I wanted to kill people. I got very angry. And I called Babelito, my co-host, and was like, who the fuck do these people think they are? Like, I'm standing here in a fucking coffee shop or wherever the fuck we were.
Yeah.
And this person is, like, sharpening razors and, like, putting things in a treasure box for like 3 hours, like, and I'm going through it. It's like, who the fuck is performing, the artist or the viewer?
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean. Like, totally. I feel like we're being duped.
Yeah.
So all that to say that I think there's a very important line when it comes to video art or performance art.
Mm-hmm.
I actually love your work, and I'm really attracted to the work that you do based on the names of colors.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what I like about your work is not only are the visuals beautiful, but like I said, I think it's accessible, and I think people can get, I mean, maybe they don't get the exact message you're giving them, but it's not some bullshit performance where somebody's like licking the ground like for no fucking reason for like 5 hours. Anyway, And I think, I mean, when I think of my family,
yeah.
I also think about work like that. Like, uh-huh. if I were to take my mom to
a museum performance,
and she would think like, oh my God, these people need help. Like, we need to help these people.
A lot of them do. Right?
Yeah, well, it's a cry for help. But how do you ever deal with that, like with your family and your artwork?
Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up a lot of interesting points in that previous, what you just said.
Monologue.
Rant. Rant against video art or perform. I mean, I felt like what you're more talking about was live performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and I think I don't have anything necessarily against live performance. I mean, I thought a lot about this. Like, a lot of people asked me, why don't I do a live performance? And I don't really have anything against it. But I guess maybe in a sort of strategic move, I acknowledge that the thing that lasts after the live performance is a documentation.
Yeah.
And I think because it exists as a video and not necessarily as live performance, I know how long things last. And I know... Mm. And I've also come to fall in love with storytelling. And a lot of times story is involved in the videos. And that also helps the viewer get drawn in, kind of like what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've done durational performances, like the one where I'm in a bathtub and I paint myself orange and I wash away the paint. And so you've only seen like the minute excerpt, but like the total performance is 10 minutes.
Mm.
And then I have another piece where I wear a mask and I kind of rip off the mask, and the mask is made of latex that's been dried. So that took like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But like that again, like I shot it, there's documentation, but then the excerpt I show is like a minute 30.
Mm.
But, you know.
I also think about like where I come from. Like, I'm from Las Vegas. Yeah. So like I'm from a town that just...
Well, it's all about performance.
It's all about performance and it's all about entertainment.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I think, well, you know, I'm not intellectual enough, or I don't understand this work because I don't know what the fuck these people are referencing. But now that I'm a little more confident, I can just say, no, this is bad.
Yeah.
Like, white people need to stop. Like, this, who the fuck do they think they are, right?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, when did you decide? I mean, I'm sure you didn't decide, but how did you end up being an artist? I mean, do you call yourself an artist?
Yeah. I do. I mean, you do too, right?
Yeah, I do. I'm just fucking with you.
I was just called an artist by two old white women this morning. Yeah. I was just walking out and this old lady's like, artist. I'm like,
Hi.
Hi. I was like so groggy. I wish I had a better comeback. But
yeah.
I was just like, yes, sure, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I think I was lucky. I was lucky because my mom kind of pushed me to pursue a hobby.
Yeah.
And... She wanted my brother, my sister, and I to all have a hobby so that we could stand out in whenever we applied to college. And so, you know, my sister did piano, and then my brother did piano, and then he quit. I think he just didn't do anything at some point. And I think it just stuck with drawing, but it was like a sort of a rote activity. I've been doing it all my life. I knew how to render things, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think I kind of fell into art because at some point after, like, getting a full-time job, I realized, like, I needed something else.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky to have already had that background in it.
You came to Miami from Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
So you've been in Pittsburgh for, like, 4 or 5 years now?
4 years, yeah.
4 years?
Yeah.
And before that, where were you?
Before that, I was in L.A.,
Oh, right, working for...
Web development.
For web development. So you've been all over, and then... I mean, I know you were born in L.A., then you went to the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for you? Are you just going to keep traveling around, like, without a home and place, and make art about that?
Yeah, yeah. purposely not find a home so I could talk about never finding a home.
I don't belong. Where do I come from? Where am I going?
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't mean to minimize
people's
work.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do a few more residencies this coming year. So
yeah.
I'll be, after this, I'm going to go to Washington State. And then in the fall, I'll be in Connecticut. And then in the spring, winter, spring, I'll be in Colorado. And then I'll be in Berlin for a little bit. I got a grant to sort of just hang out there.
You better cash those Trump checks. I know. Good job. Yeah.
Gotta get out of here.
You gotta get out of here. Okay. They might not let you back in. So, I know that you hate the humidity and the heat. So I bet you're gonna have a great time in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Beautiful weather there.
And that's why I take 4 showers a day, right?
And that's why you take 4 showers a day here in beautiful Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
Florida, the Sunshine State.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty dark, like, half the time we've been here. But we've done a lot. I feel like...
I feel like our goals match a lot of times for, like, exploring a city.
I love... Yeah, whenever I do a residency, I love to explore a city. Really just eat everywhere. And usually I do tag along with other artists. Like, I never really have a mission myself. Like, yeah. I pretend that I'm, like... Oh, yeah, I want to meet all these pinata makers, but I don't care.
Yeah.
But that's just something that white people love to hear, so I always say that. It's been really... I probably would have never went to the Everglades if it wasn't for you. We went to the Everglades. We saw alligators in their natural habitat. That was terrifying.
We became... we got all these boils from the mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes. That was crazy. I've never seen so many mosquitoes in one place.
And then we got, like, a whole swarm in the car, which was insane.
My God.
So, like, as we were walking out, Justin was like, how do they know that we are here? And I was like, I think it's the CO2. And then we walk out, and there's this lady there who was waiting for us, and she had turned on the car with the air conditioner on, thinking it was, like, being a gesture of niceness. But then all the mosquitoes were just hovering around the exhaust. And I was like, yep.
Thousands of mosquitoes.
We open the door and they all just jump into the car.
Oh, that was crazy. That was insane. What else have we done? We've done so much, but let's talk about the food that we've eaten here in Miami. What has been your favorite so far? I mean, we talked about it before in a previous episode, but now we've eaten at so many places. And the diversity here with the restaurants, more like Latino restaurants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Hispanic. I don't know what people call themselves here. I don't want to label people.
Yeah, I don't know. Because
people don't like to be labeled here.
I could just say, like,
yeah,
Central and South American.
Central and South American. Like slash Caribbean hyphen European fusion.
Yeah. No Asian.
No Asian.
No Asian food.
I'm really loving the Central American fried food that's everywhere here.
Mm-hmm.
Cuban food, obviously. We went to El Palacio de los Jugos. I think that's been my favorite spot.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And then we had Haitian food. What else?
Claudia cooked for us.
That's right. So we have...
I wish we didn't talk about the empanadas.
Justin
and I made it.
Yeah.
Based off of Claudia's teaching us last time on Sunday, right?
Yeah, so Claudia just came... I mean, Claudia is the lady that cleans the Fountainhead residency. And she brought empanadas before I got here. And then she said she was going to show us. So before Corey left, she showed us how to make empanadas. And then we made them the other night.
I made a lot.
A lot, like 40 or 50.
Something like that,
it was incredible. We're still eating them. Like 2 weeks ago, we made them.
Justin made a few experimental ones.
Peanut butter and jelly empanadas.
Uh-huh.
Cheese ones. Ham and cheese.
Ham and cheese.
Yeah. And some potato ones, but those were actually good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mi nombre es Claudia. En este momento voy a empezar a picar el cilantro para hacer el picante colombiano. Estoy picando el cilantro. Entre más chiquito, mucho mejor, porque se siente gustosito. Entonces se le va a echar cilantro.
Es para la carne.
Para el picante. Ese es el picante el que picante. Se le va a echar a las empanadas. Porque empanadas sin picante no sabía nada. Entonces, se va a picar cebolla, pimentón verde, pimentón rojo, jalapeño mexicano para que esté un poquito picante y otro jalapeño y el vinagre. Okay. Se le echa vinagre. ¿Y a dónde está el...? ¿Dónde está ahora? Una vez que termine esto, lo sirvo en esta jarra. Lo mixeo todo. Ahora voy a mixear el vinagre. Completo se echa todo porque es para que haya bastante picante colombiano. Ya terminé con el vinagre, viste que es poco.
Uh-huh.
Entonces, ahora le echamos un poquito de salsa picante. prueba lo que tú veas. No está picante, está un poquito, pero una vez que el vinagre le ayude.
Es como Louisiana hot sauce.
Sí.
Okay. Que le ayude Z1. Z1 is here, and he is.
Little pieces. Entre más chiquito mejor. Dile que a él en inglés que entre más chiquito mejor.
The smaller the better. So como el chiquito chiquito, tiny tiny dice. Yeah. So Z1 is cutting a green pepper, and Claudia is cutting the cilantro right now.
Tú viste como yo la estoy haciendo, esto es fácil de preparar. Mm-hmm. Una vez que la papa es servida, tú la dejas enfriar un poco, le quitas la cáscara suavemente. Una vez que ya le quiten la cáscara, desmenuzas la papa como si fuera sweet potato, y le vas a ligar el picadillo.
Okay.
Como si fuera un puré picadillo con papa, y vas a hacer unas bolitas chiquitas la medida de la empanada. Va a quedar delicioso. Picante colombiano, empanadas colombianas. Ojalá les guste. Para que me llamen, a mi teléfono y hagan órdenes de empanadas. ¿Eso sale ahí?
Sí.
Perfecto. Así que hazme publicidad.
Oh, sí, cómo no.
Y arepas colombianas también vendemos.
¿Usted es de Colombia?
Sí, de Medellín.
De Medellín. Ajá. ¿Y cuántos años ha vivido aquí en Miami?
Bueno, aquí en Miami llevo como 15 y el resto lo viví en Chicago, en Los Ángeles, he estado en México también.
Sí. ¿En México?
Sí.
¿Cuántos años vivió México?
Viví como 2 años allá, me fascina México. I love it, la comida, todo. Ahora estoy picando la cebolla de rama larga. Esta le da decoración al picante y gusto. Está fuerte. Hay que echarle nomás un poquito porque no quiero que quede tan picante la salsa. Lo que más hace mi favor, como tú no has probado nada, prueba un chin. A ver si está picante esta o si es la salsa que no pica. Porque yo cogí una así rápido. No leí. Pero esta la que hizo mi mamá. Entonces quiero saber si no está muy fuerte de picante.
¿Cómo se llama esto?
Picante colombiano.
Picante colombiano.
¿Necesito una
cucharita? Sí.
Picante colombiano. Sí, because this is hot, very hot, y this is medium. It's not that hot. It's like a make a decoration.
Yeah.
You see, mira, it's like this, pero it has to be more strong, more coloring.
More red.
Sí. Que quede más naranjadito para que si sepa salsa picante de verdad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Claudia coming over, Chef Creole, and the place of the fruit juice or whatever.
And you like to cook, I've noticed.
Certain things, yeah.
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 You've made dirty pasta twice. Mm-hmm. That's delicious.
Yeah. Key lime pie.
Oh my god, that was amazing. I didn't know that was my favorite pie until you made it.
Really?
I love it now. I mean, maybe it was just yours, but I love the tartness and the sweetness.
Yeah,
like the perfect ratio key lime pie.
See if you can go get to the Florida Keys.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. So, I'm just trying to stay alive so I can leave.
Just stay down there until you leave until July 16th.
I know, right? you've been trying to shoot a lot here in Miami.
Yeah.
So the way that you described your process a lot to people is that you're kind of just collecting all this footage and you see it almost as a way of like collecting colors to make a painting. And eventually you collect enough footage to create a video.
Yeah, yeah.
The last video that you showed me that you made was you naming a lot of colors that are based on race or location.
Yeah.
Like Chinatown orange, like Mexicali rose,
Cherokee red,
Peking orange,
Plantation tan.
Yeah. So, and that was really funny because when I got here, I bought Aquafresh toothpaste, and it said Ultimate White on there, and I hadn't even seen the video, and I made a painting that said Ultimate White in piñata, because I just kept thinking about this neighborhood that we're in,
yeah,
that is like the neighborhood, the Armitage neighborhood from Get Out. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to make something with this red, white, and blue.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I ended up making a cape for you for one of your videos, and we actually shot that today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see what you come up with.
Yeah.
And maybe by the time this podcast comes out, maybe there can be a clip or a photo of,
of some of we the can stuff. Do that. I mean, still. I'm excited. I mean, I feel like I've been shooting a lot more. I have, like, a lot more random good clips, I feel like. Because the good thing is Miami's beautiful. Like, there, I think it got a lot of shots.
You know where it's, you know, Miami is even more beautiful? Like, on TV. Like, from inside a house.
Yeah.
You know, because you see these beautiful places and you don't realize how hot and humid they are.
Yeah,
until you're in the location.
Yeah, yeah.
Being here, I realize why people pay so much money to, like, live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you get the beauty of the green, you know, but it's not sticky like it is here.
But LA looks like LA, though.
Yeah.
Like, you got, like, the cement and then the palm trees.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to go inland to find... You can find it. And then once you start going inland, it becomes, like, more deserty, which is also beautiful.
Yeah.
But this, at least, like...
It's beautiful here, though.
Like, I mean, like you have to drive further. Like, we just went... I got some beautiful shots at South Point Beach, you know, just shooting out by the ocean at the Everglades. It's just, like, the diversity of landscapes within an enclosed area seems pretty diverse. Whereas LA's, there's a diverse landscape, but you're talking about, like, 2 to 4 hour drives.
Sure.
And that's reasonable if you, like, live there, like, on a weekend, go snowboarding one weekend, and then go to the beach next weekend.
Yeah.
We don't have a car, so it seems like we have more access to these things.
Totally. We've been talking a lot about the Florida Man website, or, like, this idea of the Florida Man, because a lot of weird things happen in Florida. Like, remember that guy who ate the other person's face? That happened. So there's a whole, like, Tumblr made up of, like...
Look it up. Just look up Florida Man meme.
Google it, Lucas. Yeah. Florida Man eats...
Just be prepared to, like, don't eat anything. Like, there's some really disgusting things that men have done.
But there was... And what happened in Deerfield, Florida, Z1?
So there's this exotic reptile pet store, and for some reason, some person was bragging about the Florida Man and how cool it was. And this one story that he told all of us was, at this pet store, there was a competition for an $800 python, and the competition was who could eat the most live cockroaches and worms.
Mm-hmm.
And this man who won, he died after winning the competition, like, while he's walking to the car. So I looked it up, and this place actually is just 40 minutes away from where we live. As I was, you know, as I'm here and, like, kind of feeling out this place, and since a lot of my work deals with site and place and location, and especially in relationship to my body, I thought about, like, how that might be a starting point to talk about the strangeness that Florida is.
Yeah.
And so I went and visited this store, and just videotaped all these different reptiles and got some great shots. But whatever form this piece ends up, I'm thinking of telling some weird myth of this story about this man who died from eating cockroaches. And I have one detail I forgot to point out. What was so interesting about this story was there's this myth that the man died because he was swallowing cockroaches whole, and the cockroaches, being, like, able to survive a nuclear blast or whatever, crawled up his mouth and into his brain. And so
ate his brain while he was alive.
Or did something. I don't even want to think about it. So...
But, like, really, he probably just, like, choked.
Yeah, I mean, but that myth, I think there's a strangeness, like, Florida Man is so strange that someone can tell that story and it still seems to make sense.
Well, you know what's crazier is, like, the truth, right? So before we went to that pet store, I Googled it, and the previous owner went to prison, or to jail, I should say, because he was beating his employees physically abusing his employees with a bearded dragon.
Lizard.
So he was taking the lizard and, like, he was taking a lizard
and hitting and people.
Grabbing it by the tail hitting people with the lizard.
Yeah.
And he went, he got charged with assault
and animal abuse.
With animal cruelty.
Yeah.
And the judge told him that he couldn't touch a reptile for the rest of his life.
That's insane.
Isn't that crazy?
So, yeah. So it almost makes, like, the story even better.
Yeah. So, like, somebody dying of a cockroach in their brain, that doesn't seem so far-fetched.
No, no, not at all.
When you hear the true stories here.
Yeah.
Yeah, Florida's a very strange place. And something that really intrigues me is kind of this, the difference in the Latino community here. I mean, that's just what I noticed. I mean, yeah. Not even just Latino, but, like, there's so much diversity. And I feel like a lot of people pride themselves on that here in Florida. Like, we've heard many people that we've encountered say, you know, oh, my kids go to school with all kinds of people. It's very diverse here. Meanwhile, we're in a gated community with cops just circling the neighborhood
to
make sure there's no POCs in the in the hood, right? So, I mean, there's a public park next door. So they're just here kind of as a veil, you know, to seem like we're being, or I don't want to say we, but this neighborhood is
safe.
Being protected and safe. Yeah. But, you know, you walk down the street and we're in Little Haiti.
Yeah.
And it's completely different.
Yeah.
You go, you drive 10 minutes and you're in Little Havana. And it's totally different.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like in any other city, like New York, you know, like there's certain communities that take over certain spaces. And I mean, that totally makes sense, right?
Right, right.
You want to be with the people that are like you.
Yeah.
Right? If I could choose where to be here in Miami, I would definitely be in Little Havana.
Yeah.
Or in Hialeah, or in little Haiti, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just walking around those neighborhoods, I feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
Than walking around here.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I think we were talking about how it's like people are more open about talking about stereotypes because they feel like there's diversity here.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard so many times, like, we are so diverse in Miami. It's like, I think people encounter a larger portion of immigrants and non-white faces, and so they just think that it's diverse, but that's not, like, but they don't necessarily understand it anymore.
Right.
So they feel like they could talk about it, whereas, like, LA is diverse but segregated, but people don't necessarily feel like they can talk about because they're not necessarily encountering them, each other as much, I feel like.
Yeah, you know? I don't know how many white people I've heard say, like, oh my gosh, I need to learn Spanish. Nobody speaks English here, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is really surprising. That was surprising to me because, like, in Vegas, like, even, you know, new to the country, you kind of have to learn English quick to work in the hospitality industry, which is the main industry Las Vegas,
right?
You know, at least certain key words.
Yeah.
But here, I mean, there's so many.
And I think that gives a veil of diversity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
What surprises me, I guess it doesn't surprise me, but what I've noticed the most is, like, this inner, this, like, Latino on Latino kind of racial hierarchy.
Right, right.
That's been happening because we get a lot of Lyft drivers.
Yeah.
And, like, somebody will scoff, like, if I misidentify them.
Yeah,
like, as Cuban.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, actually, I'm from Venezuela. I'm from Argentina, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, okay, sorry. I just, you know, most white Latinos are Cubans here, so that's why.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was just trying to make you ask me where I was from. I asked.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole complicated thing of, like, where are you from.
Yeah.
And, like, how you ask it, sort of thing.
Yeah. You know? So where are you from, Zeewan?
Where are you from?
Where are you really from?
Where are you really from?
No, no. I mean, like, where are you from?
Where are your parents from?
What a world! What a world we live in.
I know.
I don't know. I feel like, so we're also at this residency, right? Where we're
last night talked about that.
Oh my god, we just had an open house here, and we're three people of color at a residency run by a white couple, and most of the artists that they collect are people of color. Sometimes I feel like we're accessories, you know. And
we're at a zoo.
Last night was an open house, so it felt like we really had to perform.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think, well, that's the price we have to pay. We're living in Miami for free for a month. But then I think, like, if I was a straight white man, would I be talked to the same way or asked to do the same things that we're kind of held at a different standard? What do you have any thoughts, feelings about that?
I feel like, I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, I've never experienced this at other residencies, and I think part of it is because this is run by basically two people.
Yeah.
Whose goal is to select people of color.
Yeah.
And so there isn't any sort of oversight.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, no one's going to question them. And, like, you know, once you're an adult, no one ever questions what you do unless it's, like, so egregious. Like, you know, short of, like, you know, sexual assault, rape, overt racism, like, everything below that, like, you know, it's never your job to call someone out for that. And so, like, even their friends, you know, who are selecting us, like, no one's really going to tell them, like, hey, like, this is a problem. Yeah. Because there's only two people, their husband and wife, so.
Right.
Whereas, like, I think most other residencies I've been to, they're just, like, people talk about it. They're like, okay, who do we want? And there's some sort of check and balance. Obviously, it's definitely skewed towards white men, but, like, at least there's a conversation.
Right.
No one's ever asking this couple, like, should we do this?
I have a talk in a couple days, and I want to bring it up. And when somebody asks me a fucking stupid-ass question, I just want to
hope it is filmed.
Would you ask me that if I was a white person?
Yeah.
You know? Like, just pretend. Like, you really don't see color, bitch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. It's very complicated. We live in a very complicated world.
I know. I mean, there's that one, you know, like, was it Hennessy Youngman? Hennessy Youngman is this persona by this artist, and he got famous for releasing these videos about art history, taking on this sort of hip-hop black persona who's, like, playing at, like, being the insider in this white art world. And he had this one sketch on, like, how difficult it is to be a person of color or a woman and paint or make an artwork. And he was saying, like, if you're just a white dude, you can paint a flower and it's just a pretty flower, no questions asked.
Yeah.
But if you're a woman, you paint a flower, it's like, oh, maybe it's a vagina, maybe it's some sort of orifice. And if you're a person of color, maybe it's a symbol for, like, freedom or slavery or some sort of oppression.
Yeah.
And so, like, it doesn't even matter how obscure or harmless or innocuous your image might be, because you're immediately attached to some sort of meaning.
Right.
But as a white man, you can totally get away with painting the most dumbest shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or making work about the dumbest topic.
And like I said before, there's nothing more dangerous than a bored white man.
Yeah, he'll become president.
Yeah, so you've been shooting here a lot, and today we went in and shot at the PAM, at the
Perez Art Museum.
Perez Art Museum, yeah. And
so Justin's... Oh, so Favi... So Favi's been making this beautiful cape and started with me thinking about wrapping myself in an American flag. I bought two American flags that I sewed together. And during the same time, Favi bought an American flag and he started making this beautiful cape using the same technique that he used to make his paintings and pinatas and wall murals, where these beautiful strands of colored paper just sort of flow down from this flag. And so I'm leaving Saturday, and so luckily the cape was finished, and so we went today to the Perez Art Museum, and we wanted to go there specifically because we found that the cape looked so beautiful as the cape was going up the stairs. It created a sort of beautiful ripple effect, because the other resident, Yvette, she wore it, and we saw it just even go up two flight of stairs.
Yeah.
And it's this beautiful thing that happened. So we went there. Our original goal was to go to Vizcaya, but that didn't happen because we had to pay a fee, a $250 fee, to even shoot there.
Yeah, so we shot at the
PAM. Vizcaya is this beautiful place that if you're ever in Miami You should totally go there.
That has been the highlight of the trip. Vizcaya, this rich guy, James Deering, he built this summer home, this summer estate.
Out of coral rock.
It's incredible. Now it's a museum. They have like the house kind of preserved the way he had it. And it's from the early 1900s, like 1912 or something. Yeah. There was so much faggotry there that I really thought he was a homo. But one of the curators talked to us last night and said that he wasn't. But I still believe in my heart that he is, because they described him as a...
bachelor for life.
Yeah, a lifelong bachelor.
And friends with John Singer Sargent.
Yeah, that usually, I mean, I'm a lifelong bachelor too, girl. So, but it's just so beautiful there. You know, it's just like so over the top, extravagant.
But in the best sort of way. It wasn't like gaudy in like a fake gold building sort of way.
Yeah, he wasn't cashing Trump checks. He was like really, I think he was just hiring artists.
He got a whole bunch of great architects and interior designers who all were gay, right?
Yeah.
And so they
did you see that bathhouse in there? Did you know there was shit going down?
He had a secret entrance from an adjacent room that could access his bedroom. So he could have secret rendezvous whenever he wanted.
Yeah. It's a beautiful place. And the nice thing is they also have art there. There's like all these
contemporary artists
with these interruptions or installations or what you call them. There's another word for them. They're just like kind of throughout the museum and through the gardens, which are really
interventions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, I guess you could call these also interventions too. There's always quinceañeras there taking their photos for like their invitations, because it's such a beautiful place.
Yeah,
I'm really glad we went there. I think I'm gonna go back. Like,
so they also have beautiful steps, so that's why we're also wanting to shoot there, and also to reference all these girls going there too. But that didn't work out.
Yeah, and I mean the cape after Z1 put it on was like, I can't get away from Las Vegas. It's like I cut all the paper the size of your body, So I just needed some sort of rule to go off of.
Yeah.
And as soon as so it was just like an American flag shape, and all the stripes and everything are long pieces of paper, like 5'8" or whatever.
Yeah.
And then because of the length of the ribbons, it became this really fluffy, Liberace style cape. Right?
Yeah.
Like it looks like a turkey feather cape that Liberace has all of them. Well, he had a lot of them.
Yeah.
So it turned out to be this like regal thing.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be more of this like
silly,
awkward thing.
Like silly peacock
dress. But
you look
fucking good in it. You look like a peacock, yeah. So that's why Vizcaya would have been the perfect place to do it. But, you know, we're rich, but, you know. Not that rich.
we're rich in character.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that was, had to go in the intense sun, but there's this beautiful breeze. It kind of gave this beautiful effect to all the different ribbons that are on the cape. And then we're going to be put on display again for 45 minutes for some rich dude in an hour.
Oh, that's going to be, we've been doing a lot of studio visits. And I think it's so awkward, but I mean, I guess that's the point of this residency, is to like connect with so many people.
Yeah.
We've met probably most of the curators here.
Yeah. Or have their emails.
Or have their emails. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. My hustle is different, I guess. Like everything that I've, I'm gonna sound like Shangela from season 4 of Drag Race or whatever. season 3 of Drag Race. Everything that I have, I've worked for. I don't have a sugar daddy. I don't need a sugar daddy. But if I had a sugar daddy, I could get one. Because what? Okay, but I don't know. I just have organically gotten art shows like through other work. You know, I get work through work. I don't get work through like wowing somebody in a studio visit. Those are usually so awkward for me. I don't know what to say, you know? So people are like, okay, tell me about your life, you know? Yeah. So it's hard for me to do those, and it kind of, it's been a good exercise here, because we've done, like, a dozen of them.
Yeah.
Years ago, I decided, like, I'm gonna stop, like worrying about people liking me, and I'm just gonna do my shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like a lot of the times for these studio visits, I like to be agreeable, and I want people to like me because I don't want. It's just easier that way, you mm-hmm. know. But I'm just yeah. tired.
I know.
I'm just it's work. Tired. It's work, right?
It's work. Yeah.
It's work. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I think it goes back to like we were talking about grad school, right? And so I went to grad school, and Justin didn't, and we were just asked by this intern at the Rubel Collection whether he should go to grad school. Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, Justin and I have different approaches to art. And I know for me, one thing I really enjoyed is talking about art. Yeah. Even if it's bad, I find it helps me at least step outside my body. Mm. And so I can talk about it and like work through my process and say like, I'm thinking about this. And then as I'm saying it, it's like, then I can like second guess myself or bounce the idea off another person, even if they're not really listening.
Yeah.
So that's what I miss, and that's what I wanted out of grad school. And so I see these two visits as an extension of that, because, you know, once you're out of school, no one really gives a shit about what you do, you know.
Nobody cares about you no matter what you do.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's yeah. something that's important for me to always think about. It's like, you don't matter.
Yeah. No, it's important. I mean, I think
I don't know, because some, a lot
I
of
think
times,
that drives me to like at least try to make good work that attracts people,
because then you don't get comfortable.
Yeah.
And like,
I get
a big head sometimes, and I'm like, I'm fine, and then like 2 months later I'm broke as a fucking joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's because I got too comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? It's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
So but like, you know, but like going back to, you know, that kid who was asking us where we should go to grad school, like Justin, Favi.
Yes.
So Favi's done like a great job of like, you know, finding out opportunities and also developing his own art practice without that. And everyone mm-hmm. has a different sort of process.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think a lot of these students are dumb. They're like hit or misses, but they could be definitely structured better.
But it's also the boundaries we set and the way that
we communicate.
Yeah. So, you know, we're here and we got to make the most of this, I guess. Okay. I don't know. Because
The guy visiting us in an hour basically owns the land that all the most expensive designer brands are on.
Oh, is that who we're meeting?
That's who
we're meeting. Oh my God.
So there's this part in Miami called the Design District where, you know, you've got your Louis Vuitton, you know, your Gucci,
Versace,
yeah. So they're all there, and he owns the land that these companies are basically on. So that's who we're meeting, and we're supposed to impress him.
How do you impress people? What's your favorite thing to do?
I don't know. I mean, like, I saw it as
a... What's the secret?
I saw it as a game when I was in grad school.
Uh-huh.
So I would, like, do tests. I'd, like, show them all my work.
Yeah.
And then not let them speak. And then I'd have a test where, like, I show them, like, a minute clip and then have them, like, have to talk to me for, like, 30 minutes or 40 minutes. And so, like, I found a way to, like, see how my work functions in different manners and how to talk to different people.
Yeah.
So I just saw it as a game.
Well, Z1... It's been great hanging out with you here in Miami.
It's great hanging out with you, too.
I am so glad. I was really nervous because, you know,
why?
I've been in residencies before where I don't get along with other artists, you know, or they're, like, really in their own world. So
artists are difficult.
Artists are weird people, right?
They're so difficult.
But this has been great. Like, meeting you, meeting Yvette, Corey, I think we've all been great roommates mm-hmm. and got along for the most part.
Yeah.
Hopefully... We'll see each other in the future, and I think that...
Yeah, on my road trip back.
Yes, you got to stop by Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
eat all of our amazing food there.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever miss you, I can just go on Amazon Prime and look up the Reading Rainbow episode you're on.
are you gonna play that?
So Z1 is very modest, but he doesn't want to really talk about his biggest claim to fame. I mean, you've shown at the Andy Warhol Museum, but even bigger than that is you reviewed a book on Reading Rainbow when you were little. How old were you when you were on that show?
8 years old.
Oh my God.
8 or 10, something like that.
You know, a playground isn't the only place you can have a good time. You can also take a high-flying ride into a good book. So, If you liked Owen, then here are three books that will swing you into a serious good time. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Hi, I'm Chris, and I just read a book I really liked. It's called Ira Sleeps Over. And boy, does Ira have a problem. Ira was invited to Reggie's house for a sleepover. He was so excited. But his older sister reminds him, "You sleep with a teddy bear every night. Reggie's gonna make fun of you if you bring that bear. He's gonna think you're a baby." That afternoon, Reggie and Ira play together. Reggie says, "We're gonna have lots of fun tonight. We can tell scary ghost stories." Uh-oh, how can Ira listen to ghost stories without his teddy bear? So, does Ira bring his teddy bear to Reggie's house? If so, does Reggie laugh? Read this book to find out.
How was that a pivotal moment in your life? You don't give a shit.
I mean, like I always say, I was way too young to kind of realize what was going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's like, you know, like you hear stories of movie stars and they're like basically in their trailers all day just, and then they like come out and do like a, you know, 1 hour shoot. And that's sort of how it was. And I think when you're an adult, you have that kind of patience. But when you're 8 years old, I think I didn't quite see why I had to wait around all day just to shoot something.
You were just pissed. You just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. 8 years old, school is fun. You didn't have homework. You know, you pretended you had to learn.
Yeah.
Grades didn't matter. Your parents didn't care what your grades were.
Yeah.
You know.
So when you were little, did you go by Chris?
Yeah, I went by Chris.
Because it was easier in school or what?
Yeah, no, I mean, when I was born, my parents originally called me Ziwan, which means intelligent cloud. And that's something that a lot of Asian parents, I guess in China, in the Chinese language, it's interesting. So names actually come, are actually words that mean something. And so my parents thought a lot about the name Ziwan. And right before I was born, they freaked out and basically thought that I wouldn't be able to assimilate in America.
Right.
So they added Chris. So my birth certificate actually for the longest time said Christopher Ziwan Chung. And I think as I sort of became someone who I understood who I was or who I wanted to be and also fell back in love with arts, I realized how important that name was to me. And so when I went to grad school, I kind of made that change and asked people to call me Ziwan. And then the second year I was there, I actually went through the motions of actually legally changing my name so that I don't have Christopher in my birth certificate.
Wow.
So.
Damn, you really did it.
Yeah.
So, that's important.
Yeah. And of course, like, my sister's Hoi Wan, my brother's Ken Wan, and my parents didn't give a shit about giving them names.
Really?
Yeah. So the longest time was like Chris and then Hoi Wan and then Ken Wan.
Why? Because you were the oldest or what?
I think they were just worried about me and then they just were like, whatever.
Because Ziwan was too weird or what?
No, I think they were just nervous as the first child. You know, and then when the second and third, they were like, whatever, fuck it. We're just going to stick with what we originally called them.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why my mom gave me the name Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that I would have an American, like, just something easy to say.
Right, right, right.
She just, like, literally picked the number one name from 1986.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I asked her, like, why did you pick that name? She's like, I don't know, everybody was named Justin back then. It's like, cool, love you too, Mom. Intelligent Cloud. Oh, my God, imagine if my name was that. Like, who would I be now?
I don't know.
Oh, shit.
Be a rock star.
I know, I'd be dead actually, so I'm actually glad I don't have a weird name. It's very important. It's very important.
Names are important, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ziwan, it was nice talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. And do you have a website?
Yep.
Can people check out your work somewhere?
Yep, my website is www.ziwan.is, is Z-H-I-W-A-N.com. I-S. I-S is Iceland.
But you just like how
I just like how Z1 is. And you can follow me on Twitter. I don't always use Twitter, but it's at Z1. Instagram is at Z1 Chung, Cheung. And what else? Facebook, I'm just, I don't know my name.
Oh, I know what I wanted to talk to you about. So Z1 and I have been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, okay.
And this is going to come out months after the finale or whatever. But let's get into the winner of...
Sasha Velour.
Sasha Velour.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into the final episode. Mm-hmm. So they did a lip sync battle, basically.
Yeah.
And it came down to Peppermint and to Sasha.
Yeah.
And what did you think of the lip syncs?
I thought it was... I enjoyed it a lot because we got to see them actually perform the entire song.
Yeah.
I think... So just... I've seen a few episodes. Like, you know, in Pittsburgh, there's a huge drag community there. And so I've been to a few bars that's been showing RuPaul. And so I know about it. But like Justin, while I was here, Favi and Corey got me into it. And so they just were showing me different seasons. We saw like All-Stars season 2, and we saw
season 9.
And so what I noticed in all those different episodes were the lip sync battles were like, I don't know, 30 seconds 40 seconds.
Yeah.
So like I couldn't really tell what was going on, you know, which is not fair
for the viewer,
but also for the performers, right? Yeah. For the drag queens, because they're performing. And like just as I know it's not fair to like watch my videos for like 30 seconds, like, you know, it was weird because, you know, these shows are about like the audience making, thinking that they have the choice, and they're like, oh yeah, I like this person, and so like I think they won because of their performance. But,
yeah,
but you actually aren't really judging anything. So it was great to see the whole song, and seeing the whole song, I was like, oh yeah, it made sense that Sasha won the first round and Peppermint won the first round, and then it made sense when Sasha won the second round.
She killed it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me today, Z1.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
And we're back. Okay, do you have...
De regreso.
Okay, do you have any recommendations, Babalito?
Yes, I do. So on the way here, I had like a 10-hour flight.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking for new podcasts to listen to. And then I started listening to Cabronas y Chingonas. Yeah. Those two queer girls are amazing. They watch all the queer media that you can possibly watch. And then they dissect it and they talk about it. And it's like... It's like I don't know, like they're friends already. So I can't wait to get on the plane tomorrow and listen to the last episodes. I think they only have 3 episodes because they just started, but it sounds like they've been having these conversations for a long time. So once again, it's called Cabronas y Chingonas. Listen to them.
Awesome. I can't wait to listen. I have been slacking, really. I thought I would listen to a lot of podcasts while I was on here in Miami, but I haven't been able to catch up. So I'm so excited to get back to Vegas, back to work, and back to listening to podcasts every day, because there's so many. I've seen so many pop up in the last couple months that
are going to be good. One of the reasons why I also wanted to talk about a Latino podcast, because they're coming really fast in the last couple of months. I wanted to highlight one of the ones that really stood out for me. So that's it, Cabronas y Chingonas.
Awesome. Well, I talked about it a little bit already, but I'm going to recommend the show at the LACMA right now, Home, because there was a lot of pieces in that show that really moved me, and I think are really important. So... if you're in the LA area and you know where the LACMA is, it's like near the tar pits, definitely check it out. It's a show with all Latinos. Like I mentioned, Ramiro Gomez's work is in it. He was the artist who did the piece, Lupita, who was on one of our episodes of Latinos Who Lunch. And also from Mi Tierra in that show is Carmen Aragote. Do you remember her? She did the wall, like the almost like a biombo with all her stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. So in this show, uh-huh. Okay, she has a piece that looks like, it almost looks like a big, big abstract painting. It's huge, right? It's like hundreds of feet, okay? And it's like on the ground, and it's brown and white. It's like squares almost, like geometric. Mm-hmm. And when I first mm-hmm. looked at it, I was like, wow, this is interesting. This is like, you know, because usually when you go to Latino shows, a lot of the stuff is very Baroque and very over the top. And this was like a giant piece, you know, but it was very simple. And I didn't really understand what was going on. And then I started walking around it and I realized that it was this huge piece of carpet. And then the more I looked at it, then I realized that it was carpet from a house. And then I went and read. Wow. Then I went and read the tag. Carmen went to her childhood home and she took all of the carpet out of her house and then painted it white so that you could see like every single stain in the carpet, and then hung it up like, you know, as a piece of art in the LACMA. So this is a piece that she did in 2010 called 720 Feet Household Mutations. So it's a really beautiful piece. So I would recommend you go see that in person. Very moving. Go ahead.
I'm actually going to go see that show too. Not this weekend, but the next weekend. And I don't know, maybe we should spend a whole episode talking about comparisons between Mi Tierra and Mi Casa.
Oh my God, please. I don't want to do that. I don't want to relive. No, just kidding. That's an interesting thought. But anyway, definitely check it out. And I didn't know you're going to be in LA, bitch. Maybe I should come with you. What do you think about that?
Pues te invité, pero no te gustan los festivales de música, pues chinga tu madre.
I don't, but if you can go to the music festival and I can go eat tacos with Luis, like, come on.
No. Quédate en tu casa.
Oh, now you're mad, huh? Now you're mad because I went to LA without you. Oh, I
see.
Yes,
I am celoso, and we don't need to talk about it.
Oh,
we don't need to
come
talk about it.
On. You better stop. Get over it.
No, I'm very excited. You should come. Cause
no, I'm going to stay home now. You don't want me to go. I'm not going to go.
Espérate, pendeja. On Sunday night, I think I'm going to see Solange, and then we're going to have a karaoke party.
¿Y no me querías invitar?
Pues no te dejas.
This is the first time I've heard about a karaoke party and Solange. I would never say no to that.
So lunch is in the music festival.
Okay.
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Obviously, you need to get some sleep because you don't know what the fuck you're saying. And
mentiroso.
I'm over here floating in the fucking sunken place. So I gotta go.
Ándale pues, güey. Ya te veo en un par de días.
All right. Well, I can't wait to do this face-to-face and with real microphones. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be refreshing. I can't wait.
Oh,
it's going to be awesome.
So fresh. All right. And as always, you can send your emails. You can send your emails to latinoswholunch@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, latinoswholunch.com. You can follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on all the social media. We're on Facebook. And then, you know, if you like our podcast, please leave us a rating on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And visibility is
essential.
All right. As always, I'm Fabi Fab.
E questo Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.